Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are going to be talking all about sequels. Not sequels that we loved, sequels that we admire. No, we are talking about sequels that should have never been made. And boy, do we have a doozy of a list on this one. And speaking of doozies, we have a great crew to join us this week. Let's go for ladies first this week. Let's welcome back to the show, Lacey.
Hi.
How are you, Lacey?
Woo-hoo. I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, and it's great to have you. And for those who don't remember, Lacey joined us a couple weeks back. She was the official winner of the Dragon Con charity auction, where she actually bid 50 cents to be on the podcast. It is awesome that, you know, she actually, you know, gave up her hard working money and she is here as a co-host, and it has been a pleasure. We've gotten some great feedback for her and you guys actually seem to like her. So I think we're going to keep her around for a bit. Welcome, Lacey.
Thanks. I was nervous the first time. I feel like this time I'm a little bit, maybe I'll take a breath this time beforehand.
It's always good to breathe on the podcast. And speaking about breathing on the podcast, let's say howdy to Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you this week?
I am peachy keen. I'm coming off a little cold, so forgive me if my voice isn't. I'm glad we've got Lacey here to sort of back us up with co-hosting duties, because, yeah, my voice is a little low, but that's, you know. That's what happens in the podcasting world.
Exactly. You go dark and scratchy. It's awesome.
Exactly.
So it is awesome to have everybody here this week, and it's going to be fun to talk about, you know, our least favorite sequels that should never have been made. So, of course, we want to hear from you guys at home. So please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com. Or we want to hear from you. Please talk to us, 404-963-9057. And if we like what you say, we will actually play it up here on the air. Show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESOAmazon.com store. That's how we, you know, get our bread and butter. This is how we can pay for our servers. This is how, you know, we have Lacey on the show, you know. You know, she's getting money under the table. You think that 50 cents, you know, will grow back on trees? Come on. So it is, you know, imperative that you guys shop at the ESO Amazon store, or we even make it easier now to go shop at Amazon. All you have to do is go to esopodcast.com/ESOAmazon. And if you click on that, you will just go to the amazon.com and highlight it, bookmark it. You know, go there all the time, and it doesn't cost you anything else, you know, other than what you're buying. It doesn't cost any extra. It doesn't, you know, pay for advertising for Amazon or anything. It just, we get a portion of your sales, and, you know, that helps us out a lot. So with that being said, let's get started. Speaking of a lot, on this week's Rants and Raves, and we talk about what's on our minds. I think there was some kind of game or something yesterday. Wasn't there, Mike?
It was a super big to-do yesterday, yes.
It was super. Yeah.
It was so super.
Except for if you live in Atlanta. It was,
yeah, exactly. Well, you know, but the game, the football itself is, you know, it's become almost secondary to the event, right? It's, I think even yesterday somebody called it, I heard someone call it an unofficial U.S. holiday. Because it's just a big deal. I mean, between, you know, the teams playing and the fans of either one, or the people just gathering around to see the latest, like the coolest commercials, or just gathering together to be with friends. Everybody's talking about it. You know, there's Fox or whoever, whatever network shows it, uses the Super Bowl to spring off a series. In this case, Fox sprung off the new 24 afterwards. I mean, it's a pretty big deal. It's one of the biggest rated events, TV events of the year. So, you know, it's even if you're not into football, like so many people aren't, especially in a geek community, it still is worthy of a note, especially since, I mean, if you're into the geek stuff, I mean, look at all the ads for Guardians of the Galaxy or Stranger Things or all these really cool ads that hit last night, too. So I think, you know, I do enjoy the game of football. I especially enjoy the Patriots as well as the Falcons. They're both quote unquote my teams. So this is the first time I've ever had two of my teams fight in a playoff of any caliber. So it was very surreal for me to see the side, to see, you know, the game and see these teams play each other. Cause I just never thought that this would happen. You know, I was hoping for a good game. It was a historic game. It was a game with an amazing result. It was the first time that the Super Bowl in its 51 years had ever gone to overtime, which in and of itself was amazingly historic. And there was a lot of other history to be made, too. So I'm not going to belabor the point for those people who are not interested in such things. But I will say that it was an exciting game. So I feel, you know, as much as I like the Patriots and I was happy that they won, I was sad that the Falcons came up short. But the Falcons have a good team. I do think they will be in the playoff picture for years to come.
Unless they choke each time. It'll be awesome.
Well, you know, look, the first time that the Patriots went to the Super Bowl, I can definitely tell you that it was not a pleasant experience.
But this wasn't their first time going to the Super Bowl for the wonderful Atlanta Falcons.
No, it was not. And but, they choked. You know, both. I mean, you know, I don't use that word because I think there's a lot more to it than that, and that sort of implies that the other team just stood by and did nothing.
The other team was wonderful, being down by 25 points, and they came back and won it. Kudos to the New England Patriots.
Yeah, I think that. I think that it was. I think it was one of those things that was like, yeah, it was one of those things that on the one hand, I was really happy that one of my teams won, but the other side of me was like, man, the Falcons deserve more than this. But considering that at the beginning of the season, nobody expected them to do anything, I think they accomplished a lot. So despite the fact that they came up short, I think big picture wise, I think there's a lot to be excited about in Atlanta going forward to the new stadium next year. I think they've got a good team, a young team that will, like I said, they'll be in the playoffs next year and the year after.
I definitely think they will. But my favorite thing about the Super Bowl, because I didn't have really any horse in this race, so my team, it was out of it way before, you know. And so basically, my reason for watching the Super Bowl, of course, was to see the commercials. And I was actually really impressed with a lot of the commercials because of the inclusiveness of the commercials, the openness, the inclusive of different races, different sexes, and, you know, basically almost like, hey, you know, no matter what's going on right now, let's include everyone. Don't, you know, worry about all that. What's going on?
The Budweiser one with the man who is immigrating from Germany to come over, and where, you know, you see Anheuser meeting Bush. That one was cool.
Yeah, they got some heat for that. There was a few people, companies that got heat for some of the commercials that they
did. 84 Lumber wasn't allowed to show their original commercial.
No. They had a very, very interesting commercial anyway. It was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what to make of that.
I couldn't figure out what the hair thing was. There was one that kept saying, for the next 4 years, we're dealing with hair. And I know, obviously, it was about Trump's hair. And I get it.
It didn't really make sense.
I really didn't quite catch the whole commercial other than we're going to make fun. And I just didn't, okay, well, do your thing. But it was a little bit weird.
I like the Airbnb commercial that was all inclusive. That showed people of all races, you know, like, and basically saying everyone is welcome.
Mm-hmm.
That one was fairly remarkable. You know, like you had mentioned earlier, I almost screamed when I had the preview for Stranger Things season 2.
Yeah, that was cool. And the Guardians of the Galaxy one. Oof.
Yes.
So good.
Oh, poor Mantis.
I have a tendency not to watch trailers for movies that I know I'm going to go see. So I actually zipped through that one. I was like, no, I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
Mm. Yeah, I don't blame you. At this point, I'm like, you know what? I don't need to see any more footage. I'm already right? there. As soon as it opens, yeah. You don't have to sell me anymore.
Exactly. I did love the football being smashed by Negan's bat.
Oh, yeah.
Walking Dead. That
was pretty cool was as well.
And like, yeah. It came right after a commercial where Jeffrey Dean Morgan played King Arthur. Yeah, Jeffrey Dean Morgan played King Arthur, and Aaron Eckhart maybe, who played the French general.
Napoleon?
Lafayette.
Or Lafayette?
No, Lafayette. And it was for an app, like a castle keep kind of protection app, you know, like a castle guard app. And for a game on iTunes. But yeah, it was that. And then right afterwards, you see Negan's bat smash football. And I was like, oh, well, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so, then yeah. I also like, you know, you've had plenty of Arnold Schwarzenegger in his commercials for the video games.
Sure. He's like taking every single catchphrase he's ever used and using it in those ads.
Hasta la vista, baby. It's like, yeah, okay. Let's go for something original, Mr. Schwarzenegger.
So Lacey, what's your experience or history with the Super Bowl over the years? I mean, is it a big deal for you and your family?
My family, my mother posts, like all day yesterday, my mother was posting Facebook videos of different people. They have people over and they've got the big screen and the dog's wearing a red vest and with the Falcons on it and all that kind of stuff. And they're, you know, making people dance. If certain, you know, they do like a truth or dare thing during the game. So if so-and-so makes this down, you have to do the chicken dance or, you know, well, they get really into it. So, I was not an outdoor kid. I have broken so many bones that my parents were like, it's okay. We're just going to get you a new desk and you can just stay inside and read books. I don't do any sports gracefully. So I have a tendency to record the game. And then right around 2 hours in, I start watching the game on fast forward and just stop it to watch the commercials. And that's what I did last night. So, but I knew what was going on just because my next door neighbors were happy, 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 not happy, not happy, not happy, happy, not happy, not, you know, so, cause you could hear the screaming through the walls. But, other than that, I really had, I had no idea. Yeah.
So, you know, with us watching it, it's just like, oh, more commercials. Yay. It's the best part of it. What did you guys think of the halftime? Did you like Gaga?
I did. And I love the fact that she had a little belly. She was like wearing she was wearing a cute little outfit and everything, but she's not like, you know, she's not starving herself to be like this, you know, perfection, you know, she looked like a normal, healthy human woman, which was fantastic. Not to mention the music. I mean, I have always liked her music, so, you know. But the fact that she had an outfit that showed that she is a woman of average size and shape was very nice.
Well, exactly. I was very happy to see that she was not embarrassed to show her midriff, and she wasn't anorexic looking, but she wasn't obese by any means. She looked normal. And that's what people should get, you know.
It reminded me of that scene in Pulp Fiction where Bruce Willis's girlfriend is talking about her little her. I went to little belly. I went to little pouch. I went to little belly because she has just a tiny little belly. I mean, that's all.
I didn't even really notice it. To be honest with you, I thought she was great. I'm a Lady Gaga fan. I don't know if I'd go as far as to say that I'm one of the quote unquote little monsters, but I do appreciate her. I think the time when I thought that she was, there was more to her than just a pop princess, was when she spent so much time with Tony Bennett and did some albums with him and some work with him and touring with him. Right. Because I can only imagine that her publicists and those people were like, don't do this. Don't tie yourself with this like old fossil, you know? And she was like, screw you. I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to have fun. And that also, you know, showed a different side of her, that she really does have vocal chops. I mean, she really is an amazing singer. And that's what I appreciated from her performance last night, is that, yeah, there was no, audio dubbing. There was no lip syncing. She was performing. She was singing. She was playing.
Yeah. Well, then what was the Oscars? Remember the Oscars? Or was it a Golden Globe where she sang, Judy Garland.
Yes.
And it was just phenomenal. And you just sit there going, what? Like she had, oh no,
Mary Poppins. I know the performance. Yep.
And she was in the audience. So she was talking about how she was so nervous because she was singing in front of someone who made that song, but it was just fantastic. It was, Julie Andrews.
And I think her days of wearing meat and all that stuff to get attention. I mean, obviously she got the attention. She doesn't need to do stunts like that anymore. There was a lot of press about how she was going to be political. And, you know, I mean, she is who she is, but she didn't go out of her way to do it. But I think just her performing, you know, including Born This Way as part of the set was enough of a message, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, very much so.
She's talked about how at the very beginning when she had all the costumes and the stuff, you know, a lot of it consisted of masks because she has anxiety. Like she's spoken out about anxiety issues, and so I think now she's gotten to the point where she's like gone so far past, you know, the level of fame that she's actually gotten to be more comfortable with like doing it with her own face. Like she doesn't cover her face anymore.
Mm-mm. Although she kind of did last night.
She did. But, you know, she made a really great Dazzler last night, if you want to know the truth, from the comic books.
Yeah. You know, if they were, you know, looking for someone to play Dazzler, they could do worse than having Gaga play her. Mm-mm.
Oh. I was impressed that they got her harness to match her outfit. Like, that's pretty impressive when you can get a harness that's, like, sparkly and sequined, and it still has the ability to keep you from falling to your death. That's double duty right there.
Yeah, I wasn't sure she was good. You know, I told Michelle last night after it was over, I was like, that was pretty good. I don't know if she's won anybody over that weren't fans before, but I do think she did a really solid performance. And lo and behold, I think she did win some people over, because I haven't heard, you know, apart from the usual negative Nellies, I haven't heard much complaints about it. As a matter of fact, I've seen a lot of things that were, a lot of people there were just like, you know, I don't usually like her, but that was really good.
No, it was quite positive. And you know what? That was a really big thing. And I loved when she threw the microphone down at the end.
And then threw herself.
So yeah, we like Gaga. Definitely. And you know, it wasn't a boring game by any means. And you know what? It's one for the ages, as we like to say. So very awesome. Any last thoughts?
On the Super Bowl?
Or anything with that, yes.
Well, as far as the Super Bowl, I'm sure it'll happen again next year. So yay.
I predict it will be at the beginning of February next year. I mean, reaching out there.
There's going to be a 52nd. There's going to be a sequel. Or is this one of those things where they shouldn't make another sequel to?
Oh, goodness.
I can make lots of comments, but I'm going to keep quiet.
Speaking of sequels, though, I'm excited. This weekend coming up, we got John Wick 2 and 50 Shades Darker. So it's like you're going to see like the two completely opposite sets of people walking into the theater at the same time. It's going to be,
that's right.
It's going to be fantastic. Like literally everyone's going to go in couples and the men are going to go left and the women are going to go right.
No, we're going to go to the Batman.
Maybe not.
No, we're going to go see Lego Batman. Hello.
Absolutely.
Gee,
which is technically a sequel as well.
That's right.
Technically, a sequel slash spinoff.
You know,
it's a spinoff more than a sequel. Everything is awesome. Okay,
all right. that's okay. We're done.
We've been done for months, dude. People might have said we've been done for 7 years. And with that being said, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with Jason Arita.
Welcome to Myobi Defend Your Childhood, a podcast where every week we put a little bit of your past on trial. Wait, you don't know who we are? Well, fine. First, we take a movie that you like. You know the ones. The ones the buses always had on field trips.
We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
The afternoon animated show tie-in.
Or rewrite history.
Or the ones your parents didn't want you to see, but you watched at a sleepover. So that's the game. Movies are 10 years old and the defendant hasn't seen them in 5. Then
we're here to talk about The Sandlot. When I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to play with the other children, so this is how I learned human interaction.
Ask them what they think.
Obviously, I remembered earwigs, because as soon as my parents found out that I was deathly afraid of parasites, they were like, let's show her Wrath of Khan.
So, in the end, does your past hold up? Can you defend your childhood? Tune in every Thursday to find out.
Hey everyone, now it's time for a really special announcement with our friends Jason and Rita. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. How are you?
Hi, we are doing awesome.
Hello!
Oh, had to do it. Absolutely. Well, you guys have been so busy. One of the reasons why we haven't heard from you in a while is you've been so uber busy with this special project. So let everybody know.
Well,
go ahead.
I created a concept that Jason helped me to flush out, and then together we wrote, directed, and produced a feature film called Seekers of the Lost Worlds. Dun, dun, dun.
That sounds awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so basically we took Indiana Jones, National Treasure, Da Vinci Code,
Goonies,
and put it all in a shaker and then shook it around and then came up with this crazy concept we call Seekers. And it's been so much fun to film. We hired a bunch of actors to help us make it look all professional-like. And, you know, learning the film business has been something really interesting, and learning what equipment to use and what not equipment to use, and just the whole process has been an amazing, amazing time. And so we finished our principal photography, which is awesome, and we were really excited about that, and we've plunged into the depths of post-production. And the at this point, what we want to do is we want to give an opportunity to our friends and family and fans and whatnot to take part in the project and actually join us in helping us get to the end of post-production a lot quicker than we normally would if we have to pretty much do this all by ourselves. So what we did is we've created a campaign on Seed and Spark, which is a filmmaking community. It's a crowdfunding community that specializes in film, and it has a bunch of great opportunities for filmmakers, including that right down to if you just follow the campaign, you don't have to contribute any money. If you just follow the campaign, if we get enough followers, we can actually get opportunities for distribution, for film festival discounts, things like that.
So. Even discounts and money that goes towards post-production, which is really, really cool.
Exactly. So we're real excited about joining with Seed and Spark and giving everybody an opportunity to participate in the post-production process. And as incentives, what we've done is Rita's pointing at me and she wants to talk about the incentives. So go ahead. Talk about the incentives.
Yeah. Like Kickstarter, you know, where you can set up a reward system depending on how much you were to contribute. We've done the same thing with Seed and Spark, but with Seed and Spark, it's a little bit different. Where some of the rewards are going to be immediate, while some rewards can continue rewarding you. Like, for example, we even have an incentive where you can actually purchase an equity stake in the film. So if we make a profit, you make a profit.
Yep. Yeah, we're calling it the executive producer level. So you'll be an executive producer. You'll be listed as an executive producer in IMDb. And you'll be able to make money if we make money. So in addition to that, we have basically incentives at every single level you can think of, from $1 all the way up. And we also are offering up some of our movie props, you know, things that we actually use to film the movie. And for example, Rita's tablet that she worked hours and hours and hours on.
Days.
You know, days and weeks. And, you know, it took forever. It's a crucial part of the film. It actually has special paint on it that you can only see with a black light. And we are.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And we are offering that. Watch it, Mike. we're actually offering that as one of our incentives. So, and there's a whole bunch of other incentives that we have going on, including putting you into the adventure itself. So, a bunch of cool stuff.
And not to mention, we even have one really cool incentive for beginning filmmakers out there. We'll even allow you to edit a small piece of the film, and you'll get to be put in the final credits. You'll also get an IMDb credit for the post production. So it's a way for some people to increase their resume.
Yep. So the idea behind it really is to get folks involved in the production, obviously to build the fan base and to get everybody excited about this project. So that's what we're trying to do.
Wow. It sounds really, I mean, it is exciting what you guys are putting together and managed to put together this far. I think I can speak for everybody here on the network. We're just really proud of you guys.
Thank you so much.
I mean,
we put a lot of effort into it, and we really owe everything to our amazing actors. Jim Horning and Chanel Spar are the two stars of the film. And their chemistry was just outstanding. When we originally started this project, Like Rita might have mentioned, this was a learning process for us. So we were just trying to learn how to be filmmakers. And with the interaction with the actors and how well they perform their scenes, it went from the original concept of being just a tiny web series, you know, 10-minute episodes, to becoming a feature film, you know, because we upped our game a bit. So we decided that, you know, we weren't just going to kind of, you know, just have these cheesy special effects and stuff. We were going to put money behind it. We were going to put our time behind it and definitely make it something worthy of the acting performances that we got from our actors.
And it wasn't just Jim and Chanel. One of the other stars on the film is somebody you know very well, Allison Farrell.
And oh, really?
Again,
awesome.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, Allison's in it, and so is Debbie Vigay.
Does she play the bad guy? She always plays the bad guy.
I have no comment on that, Mike. Yeah, spoilers.
Scott was also in it briefly.
Yes.
As himself, because we needed an archaeologist.
Yes. But yeah, so it's been kind of a team effort, and we've had a lot of fun with it. So we hope folks will check it out. And obviously, you guys will have a link to it. But for those that wanted to hear it right now, it's seedandspark.com/seekers-of-the-lost-worlds.
Well, that's a mouthful.
Yeah. Yes. Click the link on the site. That's the best way to get there.
Well, here's a question for you guys. How long is it going till?
Well, that is a cool thing. Unlike Kickstarter, where it limits how long you can go, Seed and Spark allows you to go, I think, as far as 2 months, which is what how long our campaign is going to be going.
We're going a full 60 days. It starts tomorrow, which, when this is being recorded, it's going to be Tuesday the 7th is when we launch. And so hopefully by the time this posts, it's already going to be live, so you guys can actually jump right into it.
Who knows? By then, awesome. It might even hit its goals.
That'd be nice. First day, hit the goal, and then it's all gravy from there.
Oh, I hope so.
You know, in my heart, I am just glowing for you guys. I am so happy to think, 4 years ago was that couple. Hi, how do you podcast?
That is so true.
And then you guys, now you guys are making feature films. That is just amazing.
Well, it's really a tribute to the network, where it got us to be out in the community, to meet people, to learn different things. And being part of the ESO network has been such a godsend for us, because it's gotten us a little bit out of our shells. And it's helped us realize that some of the things that we actually love to do. And filmmaking is definitely right up there. I mean, since we've been part of the network, we've done comics, we've done novels, we've done all kinds of crazy stuff. But by far, I think this has been the most fun that we've had.
No, you guys are just amazing. And truthfully, from all of us, we are very proud of you guys and looking forward to seeing where you guys go.
We appreciate that, Mike. And for those of you that listen to Transmissions from Atlantis, we will be having another episode coming out very soon. We're very, very sorry that we have not put out an episode in a little while, but we will definitely be having one come out within the next few days.
Somebody actually asked me about a week ago, are they still part of the network?
Yes, we are.
And we will try to be much more regular as well. But it's been a little crazy of late, as you can imagine.
Oh, you guys will be movie stars and you'll just say, yes, or what?
And another cool thing about this campaign is that we're going to be holding some little mini events to kind of keep the momentum going. Like in the second week, we're actually going to have a matching contribution event, where we have one of our contributors is going to be matching up to $2,000 in total.
Yep. And another thing that Rita came up with was that she's going to have a Facebook Live video of me eating vegetables. And anybody that knows me knows that I absolutely hate anything green.
Yep. So for a whole hour, anybody who contributes a certain amount of money,
Any amount of money
gets to pick what vegetable he eats, and he's going to sit in front of a table with a whole roll of raw veggies.
Oh, wow. I got a nice roll of $20 right here. $20 bills right on the table.
So Mike, hold your cash until that event, and then choose the onion.
Oh, sweetie, I was thinking eggplant. I was thinking I was thinking zucchinis.
Oh, come on.
Oh, man. I love some zucchini.
And get this one. Have you ever eaten, you ready for this, spaghetti squash?
Oh, that sounds disgusting.
I heard it's really good.
Yeah, it sounds disgusting. Why would anybody do that to spaghetti?
But Mike, just for you, I will make a plate of spaghetti squash just for that event.
Oh, promises. Oh, you guys got my money. I was going to donate anyway, but I'm just going to hold on to it just to see him.
You're a great guy, Mike. Let me tell you.
You've called me worse, my friend. Well, thank you guys so much. And we can't say enough, folks. We've always had people come on to the network and come on to our show to, try to get money for different projects and stuff. But this one's close to home for us. This one is definitely, part of the family, definitely helps support Jason and Rita and their project. It's going to be amazing.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you so much, Mike. And I mean, just to know that, we have your support like this
means a lot to us.
Means a whole lot to us.
That is awesome, my friends. And, can't wait till you guys come back and do podcasts for us again.
This week, it's coming up this week.
We promise.
Exactly. There's nothing like a Jason and Rita podcast. That's all I need to say.
Well, this one was pretty good. We just had a bit of a lull, you know, between the holidays, me still recovering from surgery, and I surprised Jason with a trip to Minnesota.
To Paisley Park.
Yes.
Yep. I'm looking forward to hearing that.
That is awesome. I saw the pictures, and it was great. It was, now it's like Judy and I are like, oh, that might be a good road trip.
It's worth it, guys. Trust me.
Yeah, but I'm not going to do what you guys did. We're going in the summer.
You know what? We went in the middle of January.
Summer is advisable.
Yes, but I still think it was totally worth it, even with the snow.
I am sure. One more time. Where can people find your project?
Seedandspark.com. So, you know what? Just search Seekers of the Lost Worlds. We're the only ones on there with that name.
Yeah, that's another cool thing about Seed and Spark. You know, if you go to Kickstarter, there's literally hundreds of items crowdfunding. When you go to Seed and Spark, there's usually only about a dozen. So it's not going to be hard to find Seekers of the Lost Worlds once we launch.
Yep.
That is awesome. Awesome, awesome. And of course, we'll see you at Dragon Con.
Absolutely. We're always there.
Excellent. We will see you soon, guys.
Thanks, Mike. Right.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back moment with sequels that should never have been made.
He's pounded down, loaded up and trucking. Are we gonna do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just like a bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal.
All right, kids, hold on to your hats. It's time to talk all about sequels that should never have been made. And we are going to have a lot of fun with this one. We're not talking about the made-to-directed DVDs or VHS or even videotape back in the old days. Hell, I'm not even going to say sequels that came out on 8-track, you know, directly. So we are not going to go there. We're not going to talk about those. We are talking about things that were either released, you know, at the movie theaters or on TV. So you could do, you know, shows that had, or made for TV movies that had sequels and, you know, or ideas like that. So we'll have a lot of fun with it. And we got a great crew to talk all about it. Of course, Lacey's here. Of course, Mike is here. And we are joined by our movie guy, Mr. Seventh Row Center himself, Alex Autry.
I have no idea why, but I always wave when you introduce me. It's a podcast. I wave every time you introduce me. I just did it now, and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm an idiot. That's great to be back, though.
It's just because you live right behind me. That's why I can see.
It's because we live like right down the street from each other. Yeah. So.
Well, you know, it just so happens. I don't know why, but every time I roll my eyes when you're introduced.
Because he mentions a podcast, it's never going to happen.
Hey, at least I didn't introduce you as Mr. Turbo too. So,
oh, we are so getting off the line right now.
So, you know, that at least was a sequel that they just didn't make. So,
they did stuff for Netflix.
Anyway.
Oh.
That counts. Okay, we won't talk about it.
Anyway, no, this is going to be an exciting one because there are just times when a really, really good idea is made and it's perfect exactly how it is. And everybody collectively says, yeah, that was good. And everybody then collectively says, don't make a sequel. And then they do anyway. So this is going to be fun. I've picked out some interesting ones that are certainly on the list. And I tried to stay away from the cash grabs, and then took a look at my list and realized that that's what all of these are.
Okay.
I think that's what, yes. I mean, sequel, prequel, cash grab all means the same thing.
Spaceballs to the cast for more money.
But I do agree with you. When I first looked at this topic, I was like, man, you could think of so many sequels that, you know, failed, didn't live up to the original, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the key is, at least for the way I looked at it here, was to look at movies that were very just as much a singular experience, mm-hmm. and yet they were so popular or had so much going for them that the studios and the powers that be wanted to milk it, so they made another one. And
yeah,
and it should have just the franchise should have just been left alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
It shouldn't have been a franchise. It just should, like, there are some movies that are just singular in nature and tell a story, beginning, middle, and done. And they don't, there's no need for anything else.
Mm-hmm. Taken.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I didn't even have it on my list, but well played.
Yeah.
That's we can open with that one. That's a good one. That's a very, you know, and
yeah.
Boy, talk about milking it. It's like two sequels and a series out of this, right?
Well, yeah. To be fair, the series is the prequel technically. So it's about how he acquired the skills.
That doesn't make it any less like of a cash grab.
That
right?
That,
yeah.
That said, if I get to see the entire season of how he manages to hook up with Famke Janssen, I'm on board. I might be taking notes, but I'm on board.
I'm still upset they didn't cast Benjamin Walker as his younger self, because that kid is a ringer for young Liam Neeson.
Yeah, I could see that.
Oh, yeah. It does sort of, you know, the sequels make it just more and more ridiculous, mm-hmm. the concept. Whereas the first one is pretty intense. There's actually some, I mean, it's not a huge big budget movie by any means.
No,
but yet it's for what it is, it's pretty good stuff. I mean, it's like I said, Liam is really solid in it. It's fun as far as a kick-ass action movie goes. And like I said, there are times when it's pretty intense, but then the next one is just kind of like, oh, you're going a little bit more over the top here. And then by the third one, it's just cartoonish.
Oh God.
Well,
it literally was, you know, I will find you and I will kill your dog. You know, by that.
Well, by the time the third one happened, she should have had a low jack installed in her arm. I mean, how many times do you have to get kidnapped before you stop leaving your house?
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like, you know what? We know you can kick ass, Liam, but the fact that you keep losing people, that sort of, you know, balances out. It doesn't make you much of a badass anymore.
It's a little awkward.
It's a little awkward.
A lot of awkward.
And the thing is the first movie really, like, considering the fact that very low budget, it was released in February, which is, as you know, is that's just a dump off date. Nobody expected this movie to make any money. I think when it was released, they projected that it was going to make somewhere between 10 and 14 million. And it winds up pulling in like 35 in its opening weekend to take the number one spot. And it held it for like 3 weeks. And it just surprised everybody. But there's a very serious subplot in this movie about human trafficking.
Trafficking,
yeah.
There's massive drug use. There's drugging these people. They're making them slaves. All this stuff. He comes in, tears everybody down. It's really, you know, I mean, all of that stuff is really kind of amazing to see. And then in the sequel, his ex-wife gets kidnapped, all in the case of revenge. And you kind of sit there and go, okay.
Wasn't it both of them? Like the ex-wife and the daughter?
No, I think they both get kidnapped and the daughter escapes. Yeah.
And the daughter escapes and winds up helping. And it's in the third one that the daughter is actually smarter than the CIA agents that are protecting her.
So. Right. Okay.
Okay. That's the first one off the list already. Wow.
It's just it's just an example, and there's so many of these that I'm just watering down the concept, and it just never lives up to the first one. And you're kind of like, stop doing this, because I think, you know, you do sort of devalue the original by doing this. I mean, we've seen it before. You can, you know, it's just like, the first one's good, but just don't worry. Don't get involved.
Yeah.
Especially if you do something like The Mummy 2, where they literally redid like exact sequences. In the first one, the library shelves go in a circle and come down like dominoes. The second one, the tomb comes down like dominoes. The first one, they had the windstorm with the face in it. The second one, they had the water with the face in it. It was literally this first movie just replayed with different pieces. It was, yeah.
But 100% more The Rock.
Well, I on that one, though, see, I will say that I don't think it was a bad idea to make a sequel to the original. Because, you know, obviously we've had many movies made about the Mummy, you know? So oh, sure. I think it was just sort of like we wanted more, but they just didn't deliver a good product. Like, to me, I was hoping, you know, after the success of the first one that they would do another one, but just not that one.
Just not the same one.
Yeah, good point. Well, I'm going
to
go out.
I wanted John Hannah to have his own little spinoff.
I would have liked that.
Yeah, I would have also. Nope. Okay, for me. All right, I'm going to go out there and put it out there. Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. Should not have been made.
Should not have been made on multiple reasons. I have to bow out of this. Because I can only say speculative things. To this day, I have not seen Indiana Jones or the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
He's like, I want my image to be pure.
My image is pure. It's them riding off into the sunset at the end of Last Crusade, and I could go, that was good. And no, I'm just, no.
Again, I will say that this is one that I definitely wanted a sequel to, but I will even go further and say that I, for the longest time, hated Temple of Doom. I thought Temple of Doom was just awful.
I was there with you.
And still don't care for it very much. Now, Crystal Skull has made Temple of Doom look like Casablanca. So I'm like, okay, well, now it's all relative. But still, I don't watch Temple of Doom that much. But it's one of those things where I definitely want more, but they just, you know, tripped up when they gave me more.
Yeah. Temple of Doom was the movie that made me hate prequels.
I could understand that. It might have been my first prequel as well. Prequels is a different conversation. I think we've already covered it on this show once before.
Probably.
But I will say that I am not a fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the thing that was that didn't go over well enough for the Crystal Skull was that the original three were supposed to be done like the serialized movies of the 30s, because mm-hmm. there's a set at a certain time. And then with Crystal Skull, they were trying to do the monster mash, like the big monster movies and the alien flick from the 50s. Because if you look at the time between, the third and the fourth installment, and I don't think it really, people weren't ready to do that. They wanted the legitimacy of an architect running around in the wherever with his with his whip and his hat. They weren't ready for this supernatural of it all.
No, it just went off the deep end, though.
Nobody wanted Shia LaBeouf. And Spielberg has this weird fascination with doing the supernatural. And I don't know why it is. I mean, Poltergeist, yes, wonderful film. But I don't know that we need, this outer space sort of thing. And now that you've actually mentioned that they were doing the monster thing, a lot of the early portions from what I've heard of Crystal Skull makes sense, like, because it's all about the atomic age.
Right.
And the monster movies like that came about because of fear of the bomb. Right.
Yep.
So at least there's a correlation. It doesn't make it good, but
it doesn't make it any better.
No.
Right.
No, it doesn't.
I like Lacey. I don't know what you guys were talking about. She's fun.
Now, the Crystal Skull just makes me look at refrigerators a lot different than I did before.
Right? Oh, my goodness. And if he had gotten in there, he never would have gotten out, because that was before they made the escape, the push button. So I don't know what they're talking about. That would have been the end of.
It would have been a very short movie.
Old Indy.
Indiana Jones locked in a refrigerator.
It would have been better than what we got.
Oh,
it just stopped shaking at the end and the credits roll.
All right. So I'll go next because it's kind of along the lines of Lacey's Taken. But I was reminded not too long ago from watching The Crow that they should definitely never make any more of those.
Oh, no.
The, The Crow is, anybody who's read the comic knows that it's a singular story about a guy, you know, going through grief of losing a loved one. And I thought the movie did an incredible job with that, not making it as dark as the comic, but yet making it something that was singular. And certainly with, you know, the death of Brandon Lee, it sort of just stands on its own as a point in time, like just a thing, you know. And a really well done movie as well. I think making a sequel to it just was bad news all around. I know it did well, but and I know the concept is interesting, but really, unless it's Eric, like, who cares? And if it is Eric, then what, you know, his tale was done after the first movie. It just was obviously a ploy to get more money out of this, you know, this idea. And none of the sequels, there's four of them. There was a TV series. I think there's a remake that's going to be made now. Mm-hmm. I just don't think any of it's necessary. I think, like I said, the work was singular enough that we should just let it be as it is.
Well, I got to say, Jason Momoa is supposed to play the lead for the new one coming out. And
really?
I'll pretty much watch him read a phone book. So,
well, then it's not necessary for him to do The Crow.
Yeah. You know, like, I'm just... So I'll at least go see it. I don't know.
I think any movie franchise that helped simultaneously launch the Nine Inch Nails sound and Hot Topic is certainly something to be discussed. But no, I agree that the especially when you consider the Eric's story is tragic to begin with, and yet he still has this era of hope, especially in the movie. Every time it's pouring outside, I can't help but think it can't rain every day. Mm-hmm. And so for a throwaway line like that, to still be part of, you know, my psyche on a film that maybe I've watched two or three times, is certainly it works. But he does in the movie version, there is still that sense of hope, even though he's going through and getting revenge in some of the neatest ways possible. But you have that scene even in which he's getting the drugs out of the girl's arm, which is just creepy as hell, to watch and unnerving and beautifully shot. It is a case where you just kind of sit there and you go, why would you do any kind of film after this story? I think that maybe with some work, they could have possibly converted this and maybe not do the sequels, but possibly work with the TV series. But yeah, the sequels were just City of Angels, especially, just not strong at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
No Greek.
But you know, it's bad when they've got Edward Furlong as a lead. It's like, don't like, just don't. That should tell you right out the bat. Don't.
Like, isn't Jason Hervey as the villain?
Okay.
But too soon? But okay.
It always is. All right. Go ahead, Alex.
The first one on my list, you know, we've been talking about, you know, sequels and everything like that, and how taking a sequel can actually make the original worse or lower its value. The first one on my list is actually a sequel of a sequel, because the first one was amazing. The second one has been called greater than the first. And then along comes Godfather 3, which was Coppola's, you know, just wanting to go back into that story one more time. And the whole film is an absolute train wreck. You've got some good acting by Pacino, but by this point, he's already going on the Scent of a Woman hoo-ha train. He's not as strong as he could be. Robert Duvall's not even in it. And then you've got the writing is so bad that anything that takes place in the first hour of the film has no bearing on the next 2 hours of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Literally. Bridget Fonda plays a reporter in the first part of the movie, and she falls in love with Sonny Corleone's illegitimate child, illegitimate son, and they're an item for the first hour of the movie, and then that hour ends, and you can almost time it, and she's gone. She's never mentioned again in the movie. It's like she never happened. And then Sonny's illegitimate son hooks up with Michael's daughter. And the movie goes off on an incest rant. And I'm just like, what? This is The Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
A horrible film. Horrible from beginning to end. And they all thought that it was going to capture all the Oscars.
Oh, God, no.
They when they released it, they were like, this is the all important third part of the series. And we all looked at it and went, oh, no, no. So sometimes you can make a good sequel, because Godfather Part Two is amazing. But when you have amazing, trying to go one step further is just a bad idea.
No, exactly. And the thing is, I love Sofia Coppola as a director.
As a director.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. As an actress, she's a wonderful director.
Exactly. I saw it and I was like, God, get her back into a shoe commercial. She was just awful. And it was just like the whole movie was like, this is not The Godfather. No.
I don't want this anywhere near The Godfather. I want this. This isn't even The Godmother. This is like, this is awful. This is no.
Well, I'm going to go off what you said though, Alex. And mine is also a sequel of a sequel.
Woo.
And anything past Terminator 2.
Yeah.
Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, and then whatever these new ones that they came out with. And even people are going to hate me for this one. The Sarah Connor Chronicles was just awful. They should have stopped with Terminator 2.
You had Rise of the Machines, Salvation, and of course, my favorite title, Genisys.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And there's rumor going that there's going to be another one.
As soon as Cameron gets the rights back to the Terminator series, yeah.
I think that's part of it. I mean, Cameron hasn't been involved since the second one. So, I mean, there's a lot to be said for, you know, that aspect of it. So,
yeah, but how strong is the second one, really? Have you tried to watch it lately?
Yeah, actually, watched it recently with William.
Furlong is bad.
The second one
Didn't I just say?
we go back to Mike's Furlong rule.
We've made that point. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Didn't James Cameron say that if he got the rights back, he was going to go back and take it from where number two let off and like ignore the rest of the series?
But there's no reason to. The end of number two clearly indicates that Judgment Day didn't happen.
Well, I understand that. I'm just saying what I read in an article.
I know. And I agree with you, but I'm just still saying that, you know.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, but yeah. Rise of the Machines was really bad. Salvation with, and again, you're getting better actors. Christian Bale was in Salvation. Yeah. Like Christian Bale should have been able to lift that film up slightly.
Instead, mm-hmm. the rant that they recorded that he went on was much more entertaining than the movie was.
Far more entertaining.
And that was Anton Yelchin too, as Kyle Reese.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, it
was.
Yeah, it was.
It was Chekhov.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep.
Miss him.
And then them totally ruining the last one with in the preview giving away what happened with John Connor. They should have left that as a surprise.
That should have been like the biggest surprise. That should have been like the you've got to see this movie because. Yeah. Mm. Ugh.
And when you talk about sequels, that's the usually what happens. Everywhere I'll just go, ugh.
Exactly.
How much longer do we got to talk about this?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Thank God we haven't done one on more of the sequels. Yet.
Should we dive into the superhero of it all?
Go for it.
Go for it.
Okay. basically any superhero series that started in the 80s shouldn't have gone past the third one, or shouldn't have gone past the second one. The third one, like Superman 3, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, even Spider-Man 3 with the Tobey Maguire series. Yeah, like, what?
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I wasn't even impressed with the Christian Bale. The third, I didn't like The Dark Knight Rises. I just, if I can't understand what the main villain is saying, I need to.
What? You don't understand what he is saying in the movie?
Purple.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. Were you asking my favorite color?
Yeah.
Okay.
When you can understand what I'm saying, you have my permission to die. I enjoyed Dark Knight Rises. I didn't enjoy it as much as the first two, because I did feel it was way too long. And the fact that, yeah, you needed subtitles for the villain, and the villain was speaking English, that's a problem. I agree with you. I think Superman and Superman 2 were brilliant. Batman, the Keaton Dark Knight Batman was great. I'm not 100% on board with Batman Returns. It's grown on me, but I felt it was just too many characters, which was a problem that plagued it through the rest of the series.
Yeah, every time they did it, they added another two villains and another love interest and another sidekick or whatever.
Yeah. Although for whatever reason, I give Batman Forever a pass, because that was a movie where the entire cast got recast. Because everybody who was originally cast for that movie had to get replaced when Keaton dropped out. Although, boy, he knew when to leave.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. It probably came the moment when Schumacher was like, "We need to make a molding of your butt." And then he goes, "Oh, but it's for the costume."
Yeah,
you know.
We need to add nipples to the costumes there.
No, that wasn't until Clooney, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, that was Clooney.
Yeah.
Give Clooney credit. He did apologize.
Oh, I know.
He actually apologized. He said he apologized for killing the Batman franchise.
Yeah. You have to blame Alfred on it, because he's the one who put the nipples on the outfits.
He really made them big too. Nobody talks about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's either a lot of room to move, or Clooney's got some major explaining to do.
It was really cold in that outfit.
He was battling Mr. Freeze. I did not think about that.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Everybody freeze.
Everybody freeze. Chill. Yeah, it's just like, oh my gosh.
Even though did have the best scene when Mr. Freeze was having everyone sing Snow Miser.
Yep.
Yeah. Either that or he ruined that song for me. It's one of the two. Yeah, the superhero sequels are difficult to do, because you have the prerequisite origin story. It's like you have to do the origin story.
Right.
And then you have the real somewhere in the first two movies, you have to do the main villain. Because that's what everybody's expecting. And then you get to the third, and in the 80s, it was a requisite that you had to have Richard Pryor in the film. Didn't make a whole lot of sense. The Superman movies, the big problem, of course, was that Warner Brothers never told Richard Donner that he was filming the first two movies at the same time. And it wasn't until he found out and walked off the set that they finished making the second movie. Which is why it's such a bizarre film, because they snuck in a different director who had his own visions for the film. What was number three? It was just Superman 3, I think. And then number 4, The Quest for Peace, but they had dropped the budget like in half for both of those films.
Wasn't Superman 3 the Richard Pryor one?
Yeah. Which featured the battle of Superman versus Superman, when Richard Pryor creates artificial kryptonite by adding in nicotine as the unknown ingredient in kryptonite.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the only thing that really sticks with me from that film is that he was able to create a massive supercomputer out of, after like putting scraps of paper and post-it notes together and saying, I need this.
Yeah.
I just, okay.
They're all really, really prime examples of how the studios just really don't understand, don't understand superhero stories. And they just figure, oh, just throw in this and this and everybody will be fine. We don't understand why four is different than the first. They just don't get it. They just don't understand. They just think if you just put in elements, this, you know, mix up in a blender and it's the same thing. It just doesn't work that way. And unfortunately, the people that, you know, were responsible for creating the first initial movies that did well, you know, were out by the second movies in most of those series, so that you don't even have the same creators. You're going with people who are, you know, less creative, if I could say that.
And in the case of Spider-Man 3, you had Sam Raimi, who wanted to do a Sandman story. Right. Battling against
the studio who wanted
a Venom story.
Yeah.
And you the end result is you have the very strange Saturday Night Fever walking scene with Tobey Maguire. Dancing Tobey Maguire. No matter what he does from now on, he'll always be dancing Tobey Maguire.
That's an awesome way to put it. Well, even Amazing Spider-Man, the second of the newer Spider-Man,
Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, was not all that hot. And I don't blame, you know, they got into the feeling of two supervillains again. They had to go for a Green Goblin, and then the whole thing with, Electro? And,
Electro, yeah.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work. And they had to, then they're rebooting the series again because it just didn't work.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, however, at least the new
the new series is going to have the entire MCU to fold into. So I think that, what is it, Tom Holland is the kid's name?
Yes.
Yeah. And so they're going with like an actual teenager this time. They're not, you know, he's not college age. This is a kid who's in high school still. I mean, let's face it, Tobey Maguire didn't really look anywhere near close to high school age.
Andrew Garfield.
Manganiello played the bad guy, you know, and then you get Andrew Garfield. He was in college, right? For those ones?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know. Fingers crossed.
Exactly. Fingers are crossed, toes are crossed. So we'll see. All
right. So technically, it should be the Iron Spider, though, right? Because doesn't he get his suit this time from Stark?
Yes.
Well, he got his suit that was in Captain America from Stark.
Yeah. Right, right. So we'll see.
That should be kind of cool. I think it's to Sony's credit that after five movies, they've kind of, you know, said, we really don't know what we're doing. We'll go halvesies with you on this if you can help us out. So, so now Spider-Man is back with the MCU and Sony gets a cut. And I think that's the way it should work.
Well, should we even talk then also about Rise of the Silver Surfer?
Oh, I was hoping it was going to come up. I really wanted to talk Fantastic Four.
Is it fair to talk about a sequel that shouldn't have been made when the original shouldn't have been made? I'm just curious about that. What's the judge's ruling on that?
I'm not sure there's ever been a Fantastic Four movie that should have got the green light.
Ooh, Cameron's.
No, I'll just all of them are awful.
The Corbin one was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
No, Lacey's excited about talking about the Fantastic Four, so tear into it.
Oh, wow. And the thing is, I love everybody in these movies. Like, I love all the actors independently. Dr. Doom from the first one.
Jessica Alba.
No, the guy, the bad guy, Julian.
Oh, sorry.
What's his name? I can't remember his last name. Anyway.
Oh, the plastic surgeon guy, yeah.
Yeah, from Nip/Tuck. Yeah,
Nip/Tuck. That's right.
I loved all of the individuals who played these roles, and then the movie happened, and I was like, "Oh no, oh no, no!" Like it just it.
You had a Godfather 3 reaction.
I did. It was horrifying.
Yeah, whoever thought of the idea of making Galactus like one of the coolest looking characters that Kirby's ever designed, just a big cloud in space, needs to be shot in the head.
I think that guy later went on to create the villain for the Green Lantern because it was also a big cloud.
He might have done. Oh, you're the guy who creates villains in the clouds guy. Come on.
Come on
to this side. Yeah, come on in.
Come on, join the fun. We could do it.
Hmm. McMahon, Julian McMahon.
There you go.
Okay, I feel better now.
Okay. I'm glad you feel better.
Yeah. And I will say, though, I liked the newer one, the reboot. I did enjoy it. I think that it should have ended before the last 15 minutes of the film. But I think without that last 15 minutes, I liked it. I thought it was a solid attempt. And then the last 15
you're
minutes
the one?
Happened.
Oh, that's awesome.
I think I am. I think I'm the one who, but you know, I got to tell you, Miles Teller, that kid can do anything. I think that he's fantastic. I think he's like I want to call him the new Tom Hanks. He's kind of like the new everyman. In my opinion.
Well, cool. Something you would look out for him.
Okay. Cool. Yep. Won't watch the movie, but I'll watch out for him.
Right on.
I'll watch Whiplash again and just not worry about the Fantastic
right?
Four.
Right? Oh, my God. And then he was in The Spectacular Now, which is it's a kind of a teen alcohol social commentary on teens today, but it was fantastic.
Cool.
Anyway, we're not talking about that. We're back to sequels or whatever, but yeah, he's fantastic.
I don't know if this is just topical, our topic today, because of Trainspotting and the sequel that's coming out now. But I must say that after seeing Trainspotting, my first thought was, man, I want to see more of this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see. I mean, I've seen the trailer for Trainspotting 2. I like the actors. I like Danny Boyle. So it might be an interesting, you know, revisit of the characters. But it's just kind of one of those things that I thought Trainspotting was a very singular experience. I don't know if we need to go back there, but I mean we're doing it, so
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think it needed to be made, or they were done with the story. It was, you know, one and done, and sometimes sequels just don't even need to be made, even 15, 16 years later.
Yeah.
You hear that?
I actually haven't seen the first one. I know I'm the only film student in the history of the world who hasn't seen the original Trainspotting. But I intend to watch it before the second one comes out. I don't know.
Okay.
We're about 40 minutes into recording this. How is it possible this group has not brought up Highlander 2 yet?
I was trying to stay away from it because I figured somebody else would.
Because there can be only one.
Man, you are telling me there was a line that everybody should have paid attention to.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm not even making this up. Anytime my mother wants to get into my face about my picking out movies, she goes, "You took me to Highlander 2."
Oh, that's delightful.
And that's fantastic. The original had this beautiful cult following. It had a absolutely great beginning, a great middle, a great end. It told the folklore. It told everything we needed to know. And at the end, there was only one left. Where did the other ones come from in the sequel?
Exactly. Oh, no, that wasn't the only one. That was just one.
Just one in this area.
Exactly. Yeah.
We can only have one inside the perimeter.
Mm-hmm. That was the Southeastern Conference. They still have Southeast, to deal with yeah.
I had forgotten about the Pac-12 Highlander.
Right, yeah.
But the thing is, I did love the TV show of that. It started out great and then died, sadly, later.
Well, it got all convoluted. I mean, they tried to – that's the thing. Right from the beginning, they tried to tie in the TV show with the movie.
Yeah.
And it was just like, this doesn't make any sense. And you know, the movies got worse. The series didn't make anything, you know, connect very well. And it just – It overcomplicated things. It was a nice, simple one and done story that they really just made by the end of it. It was just a mess.
With great music from Queen.
Opposite. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
If you look at a cult film and you look at all the requisites, and not one of these ones where we could just throw the phrase cult film on it because it's a bad movie, but rather put a label on it because as a film over time, it still holds up. Highlander still holds up. And yet the sequel stopped holding up, I guess, shortly after the title appeared on the screen. Because at that point it was supposed to be like 50 years in the future from the last one or something like that. And then, you know, he's an old man and he winds up getting into a fight and he cuts off the guy's head. Suddenly he becomes young again and kisses the young reporter who at that point should have gone, ew, but didn't. And suddenly was the love interest. And then suddenly for no reason, they were able to bring back Sean Connery.
Well, don't forget about the aliens.
Not for no reason.
Yeah, okay, not for no reason. It was probably a contract. But like Connery comes back to life, and his first question should have been, you know, I'm not doing a Sean Connery impression. I've been dead for like 100 years. How did you? I know. Why am I back now? And instead of just like, hey, there's my buddy, Connor McLeod or whatever. That was bad. It made Godfather 3 look like Godfather 2.
I am interested in this. Obviously this franchise is, getting a lot of press now too, because, John Wick 2, which has just been released, the director of that, Chad Stahelski, is that correct?
Close enough.
Sure. We'll go with that. Chad, anyway, is attached to as being to reboot the Highlander series.
Yes. So,
and he's been talking about it a lot during his little press packets for John Wick 2. And he seems like he's enthusiastic. He seems like he's going to try to make it so that it makes some sense. He says he's going to put in elements from a lot of things, including the series. One thing he said that really confused me was he said that that I don't know how you can do a Highlander movie without vocals by Freddie Mercury. And I'm like, well, you're going to have to. So
at least I'm not curious new ones. Yeah. Not new lyrics from Freddie Mercury, yeah, but exactly. Certainly. So, you know what? If he's going to do a Highlander movie, then yeah, get Queen. Get Queen to do the soundtrack. And if it has to be Adam Lambert on the vocals, it won't be as good. But we at least know that coming in that it's not going to be as good. You know, and honestly, I mean, there's a lot that a Queen soundtrack can do to elevate a film. Case in point, Flash Gordon. That movie is awful and you know it.
It's not awful. Get out of here.
I love Flash Gordon.
Yeah, that's fine. It's still a bad movie. Anyway.
It is not a bad movie.
It's in my DVD collection. It's a bad movie, but it's not the worst movie. And it does have a Bond in it. But not a good Bond.
You're really just treading even closer and closer to the airlock, sir.
It's Lazenby or nothing. Anyway.
All right. I'm just flicking a switch now.
Keep your hand off that button. But no, the fact is that a Queen soundtrack will elevate a film. I'm just not 100%. It's the reason why you should make a sequel.
No. I'm curious, though. I do like the idea of the franchise. You know, maybe, you know, I would not be surprised if I don't know who's attached to it as to star in it. But it'll probably be Jason Momoa, too. I mean, he's attached to everything, so... And apparently, you know, people will watch him read the phone book. So
Jason Momoa and Ryan Reynolds and Miles Teller.
Reynolds as the Spaniard.
Ryan Reynolds as the Spaniard. Miles Teller as the villain.
Jason Momoa as the Highlander.
As the Highlander. Yes.
Wow.
Music from Queen. Music by Queen and Adam Lambert. Oh, yeah, it's going to do really well.
Wow. Yeah.
We laugh about it now.
Now I'm like silently casting this movie in my head. Like I'm trying to think and go, you know, who do I really want to see it? You know, anyway.
All right, I'm going to throw
Brown
this.
Still alive?
I mean, of course he is. Could
just do the, he could still do the role then.
Yes, he could.
Who?
Clancy Brown. Clancy is still around.
Oh, yeah.
He was just in Daredevil, season two.
I still haven't watched
that. He was on. Before that, he was in Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah,
for a
couple seasons.
Yeah,
he got beheaded.
And he still does Matthew. Mr. Crab on SpongeBob. So there you go. All right.
Wow.
How about this one for a sequel that should not be made? The Matrix series.
Yes. Yeah, just in general.
They should have stopped at the first one.
The first one was for a lot of people amazing filmmaking. And yeah, the sequels, no.
Yeah.
The Matrix is the series is definitely like I definitely think that sequels should have or you know, I wanted to see more. So I wanted to see better ones, certainly, but sure. But I think it's what I think of as a prime example of sequels diluting the original. Because I loved that first movie and I saw it over and over and over again after the sequels were released. I don't think I've seen it all the way through since then. I just don't, there's too much baggage now. I just don't care. Mm-hmm. And as much as I liked it. And as much as, I mean, it's a revolutionary movie in a lot of ways. It's
no
so
pun intended.
Good. Yeah, absolutely. No. I always intend the pun, by the way. So, I will say that, they did not do the original any favors by the two sequels. And I'm glad they stopped there. I'm sure it'll be rebooted in 5 years.
Yeah, probably.
What about sequels who don't have the original star?
Sure. Like which one?
Oh,
there's many of them.
Caddyshack.
Yeah. Caddyshack.
Predator,
too.
Oh, Caddyshack. Predator. Too.
Even XXX, man. I mean, come on. You can't make XXX without Vin Diesel. You can't make, you know, you can't make Caddyshack without Ronnie Dangerfield.
See, I liked, I liked Predator 2, though. I really liked
Predator. I didn't. Oh, really? Okay. All right. I mean, I didn't.
Predator 2, I'll give you. Predator 2 is pretty solid.
Yeah. Danny Glover
Glover's good. I think we can all agree, though, that Jackie Mason is no replacement for Ronnie Dangerfield.
No, he is not.
No, we can all agree on that.
Yes. It was Robert Stack replacing Ted Knight, if I remember correctly. The only person who came back was Chevy Chase.
Yeah,
and even Chevy said this was a bad idea.
Yeah, because so, you ended up with Dan Aykroyd took over Bill Murray.
Dan Aykroyd did Bill Murray role, and and Randy Quaid playing crazy Randy Quaid.
I don't think he was playing.
That was not much of a stretch.
No. That was. Caddyshack 2. Along the same lines, I actually had on my list Teen Wolf 2.
Jason Bateman.
Playing the cousin of Michael J. Fox. And when you consider the fact that Teen Wolf sat on the shelf for a year because they didn't feel it was a strong enough movie. And then Michael J. Fox with both Family Ties and Back to the Future.
Yeah, Back to the Future, yeah.
You know, then they release it, and suddenly the Teen Wolf thing is a cash cow, or cash wolf, I guess. but they couldn't get anybody, I think, from the original cast for that. I think they got the dad.
Yep, the dad stayed.
And his friend who knew about the wolf curse. But then everybody knew about the wolf curse because he was running around as a wolf. So I don't know. It was just a kind of a blatant cash grab on that one. They definitely, you know, went out of their way to go, look, we know that, you know, it's the exact same story. And we don't have anybody major coming back for this. But we're making this movie regardless.
But the series that they ended up doing afterwards has been on for what, like 6 years, I think.
That's the one from MTV.
Yeah. But it has
nothing. The similarities between the two are the title.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So, you know, it's a lot like saying that the TV show and the movie for Buffy the Vampire Slayer have a connection. At least, you know, there are names involved in that one. But yeah. And again, the TV series much better than the film.
Right. And the same thing happened with the Sitting on the Shelf until Luke Perry made it with the 90210.
Yep.
Yep.
So,
wow.
How about Blair Witch 2?
Also on my list.
Yeah.
You can't do a fake found footage movie and then do a second fake found footage movie.
No, you can't.
If you realize the Book of Shadows, which it's called Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2.
Yeah.
There is no Book of Shadows in the movie.
Of course not.
There's no Book of Shadows in the movies. It's not even mentioned in the film. But instead of doing a found footage one, they made this one trying to live off that reputation. And I think Blair Witch was innovative. Because the idea of a found footage film and doing everything from a first person thing, we wouldn't have Cloverfield without Blair Witch. Mm-hmm. So take that either way. It's just that sequel was blatantly a case where you know the name, you'll buy the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The first one cost $7 to make and made millions, so we gotta do that again.
Exactly.
Yeah, the first one is an event. I mean, everybody saw it. That question mark as to whether it was real or not, et cetera, et cetera. And then obviously after that wears off, I mean, I don't think anybody watches it now. I don't think anybody looks at it and goes, great movie now. Like that's
I think a lot of teenagers do. At like the first sleepover. Where you get a bunch of people together and someone goes, hey, have you heard about this Blair Witch movie?
I'm not around teenage sleepovers, so I'll take your word for that.
I think we're going to have to talk, you know.
Mike hasn't been around a sleepover since the restraining order. I don't say that I know this sort of thing. I imagine that that's a film that still gets watched by groups. I don't think it's a big group. I don't think it's, you know, strong group, but I certainly think it gets watched.
Do you think anyone really asked for a sequel of Independence Day?
No.
I think the studio wanted one, yes.
So I think the studio wanted to be able to continue using the name, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Will Smith didn't even try to be in this one. That's how bad it was.
Yeah. We mentioned Triple X just a moment ago. They never bothered. I haven't seen the new one yet, so I'm curious if how they handle the fact that at the beginning of the second Triple X movie, they kill Xander Cage.
Yeah, I haven't seen the next one either, but I think it was something. Yeah.
Yeah.
When has that ever stopped anybody from coming back?
Exactly.
Gwen Stacy. Ben Parker.
You're not reading Spider-Man right now, are you?
I'm not real. Are they doing Spider-Man? No, I know about Spider-Gwen.
So we haven't talked action. Not a lot of action yet. We haven't talked about Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, any of those.
I personally loved all
the Lethal Weapons, but man. Die Hard 3 and 5 kind of murdered my soul a little bit.
The last one, was that 5?
Die Hard. A good day to just stop it.
That was awful. That was, you know, the fourth one was pretty solid. They should have just ended it there, but no. I think anytime they bring a son into things, they should have learned, you know, I don't know. They should have looked at anyone. Oh, let's not do that. Nobody wants to see father-son action movies. Yeah. Nobody.
Well, they say they're making number 6. They say that Bruce Willis said he's willing to do one more.
Oh, it was funny. The first time we showed William Die Hard, he didn't even know that was Bruce Willis at first. He says, that's Bruce Willis? He has hair?
Yeah.
So it was...
Live Free or Die Hard had only one good scene line in it for me. And that was actually the scene with Kevin Smith.
Of course,
And it's when Willis looks at the standee for Boba Fett. And he goes, "I like this," and he goes, "What are you a fan of the Fett?" And he goes, "No, I'm more of a fan of Star Wars." And it's and it's just like that's what we're getting from this film, and yet that's the good line. So yeah, I don't know. I was not a big fan of Die Hard 2. Die Hard 3 I liked.
Yeah.
but it was Die Hard with a Vengeance. That one I could still watch over and over again. I think it has a lot to do with Samuel L. Jackson.
So is it just the odd number ones then?
So it's odd number ones for Indiana Jones and for Die Hard movies. It's even numbered ones for Star Trek movies.
Wait, keep in mind Die Hard 5 is an odd number.
Okay, I didn't say it was a perfect formula.
There are exceptions to every rule.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Are we talking Jaws? Have we talked about Jaws yet?
We have not talked about Jaws.
Jaws and the Revenge.
A great example of a movie that should never have had a sequel.
Jaws 3D. Holy crap, Jaws 3D. Horrible That's film.
3D is the one in the amusement in the park.
SeaWorld,
right?
Yes.
In the park. Okay. And they keep flashing down to the bottom of the thing where the shark is moving, but the body of the shark isn't moving.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the tail isn't moving, and it's just like, wow. This could not look more fake. I think they made Louis Gossett Jr. give back his Oscar after that. And if they didn't, they should have.
If they didn't after Iron Eagle 2, yeah, certainly.
Was that direct to video or was that?
I don't know.
Okay, because otherwise we could tack that in.
There were a couple I was thinking about, but I don't know if they were direct to video or not. Cruel Intentions and The Skulls.
Both of those were direct. I think both of those are direct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, then never mind.
What about Grease 2?
I love Grease 2.
Grease 2 is so awful.
I like Grease 2.
Oh, Grease 2 is awful. No.
Wow.
Love Grease 2.
Okay, then we'll sing along for the song Reproduction. 3, 2. No. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's. Oh, man. You know, it's weird because that movie actually was made like 4 years after the original, but it feels like so much more time had passed between the two.
Well, and you know, the High School Musical, that series is actually the Grease franchise. Grease 3 is they bought the rights to Grease and they turned it into High School Musical.
I'm actually remarkably okay with that.
Yeah, High School Musical 1 is actually Grease 3, and then it goes on for, I think there's, what, 3 High School Musicals?
There's 3 High School Musicals, and only one of them was released in theaters.
Okay, I don't know about the direct-to-video or if they were on the Disney Channel, though.
Yeah, they were on Disney Channel. It's very weird. High School Musical and High School Musical 2 were both made for Disney Channel. High School Musical 3 got released in theaters. It's a weird case where it like went from television to the screen. So
I got another Bruce Willis sequel that should not have been made.
Hudson Hawk 2. Oh, sorry.
The Whole 10 Yards.
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah. I love the first one though. Cause it took
first one's
it,
good.
The first one. Cause I didn't expect that to be good. And I actually really liked it. Hell, I even liked Matthew Perry.
And it's a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. When you're done with it, you really don't have to have any more. The only one on my it's another one of those ones that you know it. You wanted to like it because you liked the first one, and no.
Along those lines, I think the last one on my list is there were two sequels actually done to A Christmas Story. One was actually released in theaters called My Summer Story.
Yes.
And one was released direct to video, which we won't talk about, which is Christmas Story 2, which is just not talking about. But still, that again, a singular movie told a singular story, was solid as what it did. There was no reason to other than to get some cash out of it.
If I remember correctly, My Summer Story replaced the old man, I think, with Charles Grodin.
Yes.
I believe that's right. Yes.
And I love Grodin. Grodin is wonderful. I think for My Summer Story, it was actually Mary Steenburgen and Charles Grodin as the parents.
And it's a Culkin that I'm not sure which one, but it's a Culkin that plays Ralphie.
Yeah.
Not Peter Billingsley.
No, none of the
nobody from the original, I think, is
The Gene Shepard is a narrator. again. And I think that's about it. There might be one other cameo or something like that, but yeah, it's pretty much, it was done so much for, like, it was done in 94. It was still directed by Bob Clark. I think it was one of the last things he did, unfortunately. But
that one in Baby Geniuses 2.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I didn't catch Baby Geniuses 1.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I don't think I did either.
Then you don't want to see Baby Geniuses 2 because they don't go back and explain anything.
Oh, good. Okay. So, I was afraid I was going to not have the backstory.
Yeah, no, you're gonna want to watch Baby Geniuses before you watch Baby Geniuses 2. Okay. A disclaimer, don't watch the Baby Geniuses movie. It was weird because that really was kind of just playing off the name, and not really giving us, well, I guess they were trying to give us a little bit of another story, because my summer story is actually not a bad storyline, but the fact that we didn't have the original actors, definitely put something on it. So I went the same way with my last one, and it's Staying Alive, which was nice. The sequel to Saturday Night Fever.
Yes.
And you know, I mean, again, you know, the end of Saturday Night Fever is really, really great because you know, they win the trophy for the dance tournament, except that Danny knows the only reason why they won is because the judges cheated. So he winds up handing the title and the victory over to the other people, walks out and says, hey, all I want to do is dance. And that's great. And so he's going to live his life being a painter and all that. And then along comes Sylvester Stallone. And Sylvester Stallone wants to make a sequel in which Danny is trying to become a dancer on Broadway.
And his brother can sing the theme song.
And his brother can sing the theme song. Do you remember the song? Satan's Alley.
I don't. I'm trying to forget it.
Thanks.
I'm going to get shot out of the air duct any moment now. Frank. The only reason why that movie was made was to help launch Frank Stallone's music career.
You know what? I am positive that's why.
Yeah, at least it worked. It worked out for Frank Stallone.
All right, we've been talking on this almost an hour now, and I think that's a good place to stop, unless we have any honorable mentions, and there are a ton of them we haven't even touched on yet.
Yeah,
this I got is a question.
For the comment. Yeah,
anybody have a sequel they wish had been made?
Oh, plenty. But that could take another hour.
Like your one sequel wish.
I'm still, well, I it's been now, but for the longest time, I really wanted to see more Incredibles. The Incredibles.
That's happening. That's happening, though.
I know. That's what I said. It's been announced. So I'm glad. So that, but for the longest time, that was my go-to answer for that. If there was another, if it was a movie to have a sequel, that's the one. So I'm glad to hear we're getting that.
Convoy 2.
Oh, jeez.
I want to know more about Pigpen. That's so Convoy 2. I want an entire movie devoted to Pigpen.
And out the airlock he goes.
Laugh with me forever.
Wow. We want to hear from you guys at home. Please feel free to write us at esopodcast@gmail.com, and we will read your ideas and sequels that shouldn't have been made up on the air, maybe. I don't know about that. Let's take a quick break. Angela is up next, and we will be back then afterwards with the Con Report.
Welcome to the Geek Girls Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about Dragon Ball Super. I've been watching a lot of anime recently, and one of the shows that I've been catching up on has been Dragon Ball Super. This show is basically if Dragon Ball GT never happened and all the characters are happy in their worlds, living their lives where it seems that martial arts fighting is life for some of these guys who basically spend months and months either dead, training with different trainers, or just hiding from their wives alive training. It's very amusing. Dragon Ball Super is really funny, and while it has the same aspects as every other Dragon Ball series, long fights that last for episodes, same characters bickering for the last who knows how many seasons, they've also brought in some new characters to spice up the same old storylines of the past and make them a little bit more interesting for fans who have been watching since the original Dragon Ball series. It's like you can't make a Dragon Ball series and fans will not go crazy for it and watch it, because it's a familiar thing to them, but it's also new and people love that. Plus, we also have to know what trouble these characters have gotten themselves into now. And the Lord of Destruction, Beerus, is a favorite of mine in this series. His love of cup noodles and earth food makes me laugh every single time, because he's a food connoisseur and travels from planet to planet finding the best food. Thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report. And yes, actually, it is me still here talking to our friend Robert Young of Borderland Comics of South Carolina. How you doing, sir?
Man, I'm doing good. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. It is an honor to have you on, because you actually run one of my favorite comic shows of the year. And it's almost coming time.
We're getting close. I mean, it is really creeping up on us.
I looked at the calendar and it's the weeks is almost a handful now. It's not that far away.
It's not. I mean, at March 25th and 26th, it is really creeping up. We actually potentially even still have some guest announcements to make. Some chips may fall in place. But the lineup we already have is pretty incredible and a heck of a lot of fun, that's for sure.
So for those who have never been to the con before, give me your elevator speech. I definitely want to hear all about it.
Well, I mean, for me, it's about making something that the whole family can enjoy. I've got kids, and I want it to be something you're comfortable bringing your five-year-old girl, or come in with your high school or college-age kid, or come in if you're in your 40s, right? I mean, I want it to be for everybody the best that we can. And that said, it's about comics. It's about some pop culture. We try to make sure we help out our community. We do a blood drive every year. I think they drew about 190 pints of blood last year. We do the drink and draw for Hero Initiative and Tim Cul-de-Sac, so it benefits comic creators and Parkinson's research. So we try to do a lot of different things, you know, a costume contest, that's always a lot of fun. So panels, which you guys is something you guys are good at. That's what you're doing it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of things just to have fun. And you try to have, you know, both comic guests and some pop culture media guests that you feel like are attractive to people and I guess relevant for the time, you know, that the show's going on.
Well, it's interesting because each year, you know, this is going to be our third year that we've been attending, and it has gone bigger and bigger every year. And, you know, are you guys expanding the room, or is it the same space that you had last time?
We're going to be able to use the whole room this time. It's 125,000 square feet.
Wow.
A lot to vacuum, right? So we've got that, and we've got panel rooms. So we've got a really big space there, and it's full. And we have so much going on in there. It's pretty crazy, really, trying to coordinate everything and get everything lined up so you can have, you know, the panels running at the right times and all the creators and things in areas that you feel like they're accessible and the lines won't be too unmanageable. It's kind of a juggling game, you know, that you play on these things, because you want people to have the biggest thing is you want them to come and you want them to have fun. I mean, it sounds so simple, but it's really the gist of everything that you're trying to do.
It's interesting because with the crowds you get, and it's just the enthusiasm of everybody who comes, you don't see anyone frowning there. You see everyone smiling, happy to be there. It's just, it's awesome, because I know that sounds kind of cliche, but it's true, man. You put on a great show, and the people who are there, you don't feel hemmed in. You don't feel like it's overly packed, because it's the way you have it set up, you don't feel like, you know, all the tables are on top of each other and there's room in the aisles and stuff to get around.
Well, sure. There's a definite fine line between, you want to make sure that the aisles are not too wide so that people will actually shop and look and not just kind of make laps through and stop. But at the same time, you don't want to, that sardine feeling is tough. It's always a good thing because it means a lot of people came. But if you had the ability to kind of with your layout fix that, you know, you hate it if you had a chance to make it where it would work better. But I appreciate that. But I see that in any show. When I go to Baltimore or when I go to DragonCon, I go to any of these shows, even Heroes in Charlotte or NC Comic Con that Alan runs up in Raleigh, Durham area. The folks are there in our whole community everywhere that I go to have a good time. You don't really see a whole lot of situations with things getting out of hand or somebody acting the way they shouldn't. I think it's really, really rare, you know, in our community that people do that. And it's one of the things I'm most proud of when we hold these events. You know, we obviously have to have police officers there. It's kind of the city law for that many people. You have to have people on guard and that kind of thing. We have literally not had a single instance that anything's ever been needed.
That's awesome.
That's something to be proud of, you know, it really is.
Mm-hmm. And so with that being said, you know, a con that like that you're putting on, you must be charging probably close to like $100 to get into that, something like that.
Like $1 million.
Exactly. Yeah. $1 million per person.
It's 17 for Saturday and 12 for Sunday. And I think it's 24 for the weekend. So we tried to make it as cheap as we could.
That is awesome.
That's the goal every year, right? I want the more people that come to the show, you know, you hope that a lot of these folks will get into our hobbies, whether it be modeling or toys or comics or even just being an artist. You know, maybe you get inspired to draw again. Getting those folks into the building, it'll help lift everybody in the area, you know, whether it be my store or whether it be competing stores. So I think that's one of the things that I really love about it is it creates community in and of itself. And then how does it make it better? And I think it does. I really do.
No, and that's understandable. And, you know, Greenville is not that far from anywhere on the East Coast, pretty much. If you think about it, it's not that far from Atlanta. It's, what, 2 hours? It's not that far from Charlotte. What, that's an hour and a half or so? And
yeah, you're exactly right. And hour and a half from Columbia, a little over an hour from Asheville. And we definitely have a fortunate position to be where we are. And we've got such a good relationship with our convention center and with the city that it definitely is beneficial and makes it easy to get everybody in. You know, the Hilton that we deal with for the drink and draw, they've been fantastic. And I mean, I can't even tell you how many hotels we sell out every year.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I've had to look around to get my reservation to stay up there. So it actually worked out really well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I might know a guy that could help you with that if you didn't.
That's awesome to know. But yeah, it's great. The TDE Convention Center is a great spot for it. And, you know, Greenville is just such a great city because even after the con's done in the evening, going to downtown Greenville is awesome.
It really is. When I moved here, downtown was really in need of a facelift. And, you know, the group of folks that got in, and the mayor, Knox White, was involved in it, and they really, really changed our downtown into just a little jewel. You know, we've got the Falls Bridge down there. It's beautiful. There's a ton of great restaurants and pubs to go hang out at, and it's all walking. You know, you get down there, park, you can just walk all of it.
Exactly.
I love our downtown. Yeah.
No, it's definitely worth it, and isn't it on, I think, the weekends and the evenings, it's free. For a lot of parking.
Oh yeah, yeah. All the city parking that is owned by the city. I know the Richardson Street Garage is one. There are several down there. All the parking's free on Friday and Saturday night. I mean, it creates tourism, which is great for the city, and so it's one of the things they opted to do. And I think it was a stroke of pure genius, to be honest with you.
Exactly, and you know, when I think of Greenville, of course, I have to think of Borderlands.
Well, I appreciate that. It's our nerdy little home.
Exactly. So is there a website for the con?
Yeah, sccomiccon.com. We've got all the guests listed there. I wanted to hit a couple, if that was okay, real quick.
Of course.
I was really proud of some of the guests we got lined up. In the comic world, you know, we've got Mark Wade and Frank Cho and Mike Zeck and Mike Golden and Neil Adams and Denny O'Neill. And that's just a few. I mean, there's a huge list of folks. I don't want to ramble off a million people. But when it comes to the media guests this year, I definitely think that we did some things a little different. And we're going to have a pretty incredible lineup this year. We've got the the gentleman, Spencer Wilding, that played Darth Vader in Rogue One.
Oh, and wow. Awesome.
That's pretty huge. And he's also that mean guard in Guardians of the Galaxy that stole Star-Lord's headphones. We've got Paul McGillian, who's from Stargate Atlantis. He is fantastic, and we really love Paul. And then we also have Shannon Purser from Stranger Things, which obviously they just ran the trailer on the Super Bowl. And Veronica Taylor, who was Ash Ketchum in Pokemon. And then last but definitely not least, we have Brian Moore, and I'm probably mispronouncing his name, but he's actually the sculptor, the original sculptor for Darth Vader's armor and the Stormtrooper armor. So he's the guy that actually sculpted that for the original movies back in 77.
That is awesome. Well, you got a great lineup.
We worked real hard on it. I was really proud of everybody that worked on it. My wife actually helped work on it a lot this year, and it just really has worked out well, I think.
Mm-hmm. That is awesome. It's, you know, you guys, it's a big family event, you know, and I don't mean coming to the show, but the people who put it on, it just, it feels like, you know, you guys treat all your guests like royalty, and it's just, it's awesome. Thank you for what you guys do.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I think it's one of the things of having a retail store in town. You generate a community with your customers. I mean, the guys are great. They become your friends and they help out at events. And so then when you do the con, it's really just an extension of those guys wanting to help out. And it's incredible how many people just wanted to help this and help put it on and create something in their area that they can be proud of and can be a lot of fun for everybody. So I think that family feeling just comes from the shop and it just transfers on into the con.
Mm-hmm. I think that is awesome. And so, folks, definitely check out the South Carolina Comic Con. It's amazing. SCComicCon.com. Definitely
absolutely worth it. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, all those things as well. But we try to get everything up on the site and up on Facebook in particular. It's always good for interacting and sending messages and stuff too.
Awesome. Thank you, Robert.
Thanks for having me on, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike and Robert. That is a great information on a great show. I am definitely looking forward to that show. I love South Carolina Comic Con, so I am looking forward to that. I was there. I was not there last year, and I missed it terribly. So this will be my return to Greenville. I'm excited. But there was a con this past weekend that it was a big, big, big show. Well, not really, but it was a small, big show, we'll say, in Atlanta, the Atlanta Comic Convention. One day show, the first one of the year. And Mike, you were there. How were things at Wes and Dave's show?
It was awesome. It was a great show as always. And, you know, the super show that they do is always their largest show of the year that they do at the hotel. And this one didn't disappoint once again. And we all had a great time. Tons of friends were there. We got to see, of course, Bobby Nash. We got to see that Putz, J.R. Mounts, and, you know, many others. And, you know, we got to, you know, hung out, we schmoozed a bit, and, you know, it was a good time. And, you know, William got, you know, himself a kendo stick, actually, at the con.
A kendo stick?
Yes.
Oh, look out.
I know. I really think he's taking this professional wrestling thing.
So how does it feel to get hit with a kendo stick?
It hurts. It isn't as fake as it looks, folks.
It is a great one-day show. I had to miss that one because I was ill and I couldn't make it. So, but yes, always good time. How many pop figures did you walk out with?
I did not walk out with one. My pop figure guy was not there this time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so pop figures were actually not that many there. And so I actually just ended up going to the $5 trade paperback guy in honor of you, Mike Gordon.
And he he was able to get some of your money this week.
Oh, yeah. Well, I actually got the last two Walking Dead trades there.
Nice.
For $5 each. Solid. So Very much looking forward to start reading those again because I have read up to book 23. So I have 24, 25, and 26 to read.
Yeah, I'm all cut up, so I'm eagerly awaiting the next one. Mm-hmm. But good stuff. Yes, I know I would have spent money there. And I know that speaking of Robert, he just had his big blowout sale Saturday, and I was sorry to miss that too, because yeah, I would have spent a lot of money this weekend between the both of those shows. I would have definitely spent a lot of money. So I guess me being sick helped out my bank account, but in any case, more events that are coming up that you can find Earth Station One Network folks at. February 24th through the 26th is Mysticon in Roanoke, Virginia. The geek girl herself, Angela Pritchett, will be at that show. So go check that out. Also on March 3rd through the 5th, it's MarsCon in Bloomington, Minnesota. The Flopcast's own Cornflake will be at that show. And I hear there's a rumor, there's going to be water aerobics. Yes, there's a rumor. So
hold on, Mike. It's dementia water aerobics.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's the stuff. So yes, if for no other reason, Bloomington, Minnesota is the place to be March 3rd to the 5th. Now, her co-host, I guess, has already seen enough water aerobics for the moment. So he will actually be at the Northeast Comic-Con in Hanover, Massachusetts, that same weekend, March 4th through the 5th. And then March 10th through the 12th is Jo-Lanta. That's right here in Atlanta. It's much more than a G.I. Joe show. It is a super toys and collectibles extravaganza. So Mike and I will be there. We'll be doing some panels. Have we got our panel information yet on that for sure? Confirmed?
Well, I already know we are confirmed for Saturday afternoon at the con.
All right.
But I don't have exact times yet, and topic is to be determined.
Dun, dun, dun. So, but we will be there. And, you know, our good friends, Ricky Bambi and the Possum King Ramblers, Radio Cult, the award-winning Bobby Nash is going to be there as well. Lots of great friends are going to be there, so we're ecstatic to be going to that show again. March 24th through the 26th is Regeneration Who, and that's in Baltimore, Maryland. Angela Pritchett will be at that Who show. March 25th through the 26th, which is the same weekend, is the aforementioned South Carolina Comic-Con, SC Comic-Con, which will be there. Then we move to April. April 28th through the 29th is Treklanta, and Mike and I will be returning to that convention after a year absence. And we'll be doing a panel. We'll be doing a live panel that we'll record. So we'll have more details on the when that will be recorded as well. So stay tuned for that. And then at the end of April is RavenCon, and that's in Williamsburg, Virginia. Angela Pritchett will be attending that show. And then in May, last but certainly not least in this report, May 5th through the 7th is Wholanta. And Angela Pritchett will be there, and the ESW folks, Mike, myself, and Jennifer Hartshorn will be at that show. We'll be recording a live panel on that one as well. They just announced a new guest. Of course, they've already announced that Colin Baker and Jamie Matheson was going to be there, but now they've announced that Camille Kaduri, I believe is her last name, is going to be there. She played Jackie Tyler, Rose's mom, on New Who. So that's, you know, pretty exciting, because I don't think she's done a lot of conventions, certainly not a lot here in the Southeast. So this is a rare opportunity to meet Jackie. That should be fun. I'm looking forward to that. That's a, you know, despite what you might think of her character, Mike, I think she's going to be a fun guest. She's probably a really lovely lady. So, I definitely think that's going to be fun, to hang out with her.
Oh, very much so. And I've heard great things about her, and you know, so she was Rose's mom. Can't hold everything against everybody.
Well, it's a good get. So congratulations to Alan and the group for adding her to their roster this year. And that's it for the Con Report for now. If you've got a show that you want us to help promote, like we did with Robert earlier, just a few minutes ago, please reach out to us. And if you've got a show that you want to rant and rave about, come on and talk about, please contact us, because we love talking about conventions.
That's going to wrap up another episode of the ESO podcast. I want to thank everyone for these great ideas for sequels that shouldn't have been made. You should have heard the ones that were coming up after we got recorded, folks. We could have done a whole podcast series on this. We might actually have to come back to this sometime. course, we'll bring back into the airlock. Come on, let's bring the tractor beam. All right, Alex, thank you.
That's my first time meeting Jenison. That was awesome.
It won't be your last.
I probably won't. I don't want it to. I want it to be my last, but it probably won't.
No. Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
Yeah. I'm really excited. This Saturday night at the Aurora Cineplex in Roswell, I'm going to be the host for a very special Valentine's showing of The Princess Bride. And I'm really excited about that. All the ladies that night, as is tradition with us, will receive a flower and a special piece of chocolate. And it's all already tacked in to the normal ticket price. So we're not even making an event price for it. It's a normal ticket. And we're just excited to be able to bring Princess Bride back up onto the big screen for Valentine's Day.
Marriage.
Marriage. Yeah. There was talk about us actually trying to find somebody who wanted to get Maui'd at the theater. So, but it's going to be a lot of fun. So we hope people will come out for that. I think we're also doing a 50 Shades showing too, but we're not going to talk about that because I'm not hosting it.
Yeah, no way. All right. Thank you, sir. And Lacey, you made it through your second episode with us.
Woohoo!
You know, it is so good to have you back. And anything you want to shout out about?
Yeah, I have a con coming up this weekend that I'm going to in Huntsville. It's the Huntsville Comic and Pop Culture Expo. Should be really cool. It's hsvexpo.com if you want to get tickets to it. They've got David Yost, the original Blue Power Ranger, and Chris Claremont, who wrote some of the X-Men. They've got Mike Grell, who was an artist known for some of his Green Arrow work. You got Joey Fatone is going to be there for all the NSYNC fans. A percentage of the door and a silent auction is going to go to Kids to Love, which helps foster kids in Huntsville, Alabama. So it should be pretty cool.
That is awesome.
That sounds outstanding.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's not next weekend. It's March 18th and 19th.
Okay.
So it's
okay.
March 18th and 19th. But yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. So she's living a month in the future than us. That's all.
How long was I in that airlock?
Exactly. Mr. Mike, we made it through another one, my friend.
Absolutely. As always, it's my pleasure, sir.
Anything you're going to shout out about, sir?
I need to give a shout out to Jay Shearer and the folks at the Reclamation Society podcast. I was on one of their Story Geek episodes recently that they just put out. Jay and I discussed in depth the first volume of Sheriff of Babylon, which is a comic series that's by DC Vertigo. Tom King and Mitch Gerard are the artist and the writer on that. And it's a very, very interesting book, and we got to, like I said, talk about it in depth, and it was really fun to be on the show. So I'll have a link to that podcast in our show notes, but it was very fun to visit their station as well.
Well, that is awesome. All right, a couple things. I wanted to, of course, give a shout out to me. I am going to be coming back to Dragon Con once again. I have been accepted as a guest once again. And thank you to the folks at the, you know, selection committee for choosing me. Thank you. And I am real excited. We have some really great ESO stuff already planned, and we're going to just, you know, ride the wave up to September going into Dragon Con. And, you know, I'm just thrilled to be able to announce it here. And it's like, I've wanted to tell everybody, but it's just like, not yet. Let's save it for the podcast. So, you know, I am real excited. And with that being said, of course, we want to hear from you guys at home. What have you guys been up to? Talk to us. Let us know. We definitely want to get you guys more involved. You know, please write us esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Of course, I'm going to give you a little bit of a guilt trip. Please rate the podcast up on iTunes. You know, all it takes is 2 seconds to push those stars and give us 5. It'd be great. If you want to give us 1 or 2, we're the Nerdist. So, you know, just think of it that way. So with that being said, you know, We will be back again next week, and we are going back to the movies, of all things. That's right, folks. We are going to go look at the Lego Batman movie, and it should be a blast to see it. Everything I've seen about it just looks awesome, and some of the new toys even look great. So I might actually go out and buy some Lego Batman stuff. So you never know. Add it to my pop collection. Not a bad idea. So with that being said, we will see you next week here on Earth Station 1, and we will talk to you then. Peace. And we're done.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com e-store, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.